Welcome to the Race 2 Dubai show. Today, we're talking Rory's woes, Ryder Cup friends and foes, who might go low in Mexico, and why Bernd Wiesberger has arrived in Chapultepec without his clubs in tow. I can do this all day. You're with Dan Roebuck in the studio. Told you. Former European Tour winner Richard Boxall is with me. Boxy, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm not too bad. I haven't done one of these with you for quite a while. Mm.
Do you know why Bernd has been separated from the tools of his trade?
Do I know what? I would say it's something to do with an airline, I would have said.
It is something to do with an airline. They have lost his clubs en route to Mexico. It's a direct flight, so how you lose someone's clubs in the direct flight, I've got no idea.
What happens is they don't get on.
I see.
That's how it works, you see. Clubs I lost in Czechoslovakia once, suitcase
I lost once. You're showing your age with Czechoslovakia,
well,
but go on.
Czech Republic. Yeah. I also lost a suitcase in Portugal. Didn't get that back for 6 months. I lied about the insurance, I have to say. They opened it up in Southend and said those two pairs of FootJoy shoes and six cashmere sweaters, funnily enough, have gone. I said, oh, well, never mind. There you go. And the other one is somebody checked in and said, hey, where are you going? He said, I want those golf clubs to go to Paris, please. He said, I want the suitcase to go to Australia. They said, well, we can't. We're going to Germany. He said, well, you did it last week.
Bob Bubka, US golf broadcaster, is also with us. Bob, any lost property aeroplane tales to tell us?
Oh, man, I've had plenty, but listening to Boxy talk about things that he lost. The biggest thing he lost was his golf game. He won, the Italian Open.
Fifth major.
And he shows up as the defending champion the following year, and he played worse than his caddy would have played.
Well, but thanks for bringing out those horrid memories.
Look, you might have lost your way then, but you haven't when it comes to the Race to Dubai show. We've got a lot to get through over the course of the Race to Dubai show this week. We're going to be focusing a little bit on what happened in the Genesis Open on the PGA Tour, but our main focus is going to be Ryder Cup a little bit later on, and also right now, a look ahead to the WGC Mexico Championship at Chapultepec Golf Club in Mexico City. It's the first of four World Golf Championship events on the European Tour this season. It's the fourth year that we're at this course, an old-fashioned course in many ways. Dustin Johnson, the winner in 2017, and last year, Phil Mickelson won in between times. It's par 71, 7,345 yards, but obviously it's at altitude, so therefore the ball flies that little bit longer. But even so, judging by those winners and the fact that Rory's finished second, Justin Thomas has finished runner-up as well, are we looking for big hitters this week, Boxy?
I think it's a shaper's course, you know, hit it right to left, left to right. Bob, he's shaking his head, Dan Roebuck. He doesn't think that. He thinks it's a big hitter's course.
Come
what
on,
do you
Bob,
think?
This is big hitters this week we're looking for if we're looking to find a winner, isn't it?
It's actually a combination of both. If you're a big hitter, you're going to have a good chance, but you better be accurate.
It's Riviera-esque-ish, I guess, a mix of Poana and bent grass. Those greens last week, Bob, I thought they were tricky, weren't they, on the Sunday? There was a lot of short ones that were slipping by.
Well, Riviera has been known as a place where, unless your putting is firing on all cylinders, you're going to have problems. I mean, look at Tiger Woods. I mean, he three-putted from 3 feet. It took a steady hand, and it's pretty amazing when we look at who came out on top. Known for his putting woes, Adam Scott's been one of the premier ball strikers in the game for a long time, but he handled that flat stick, actually his big putter, and putted very well when he needed to.
No doubt about that. It was a win for Adam Scott, yet another Australian in the winner's enclosure. He won the Genesis Invitational on the PGA Tour. Back-to-back wins for Scott after he triumphed in the Australian PGA Championship on the European Tour just before Christmas.
My career is in a good spot, I guess. You know, even before winning this week, I feel like physically and somewhat mentally I'm okay after 20 years out here. And, you know, I really do believe if I can maintain motivation and focus, the next 5 years can be my best years on tour. Maintaining that focus and that drive for the long periods of time isn't easy, but I think I need that to leave the game satisfied at some point, but they're pretty lofty goals, so this is a good start. It's one week out of the next 5 years.
Interesting the way that he goes about his schedule. He says he likes to starve himself of competition, wants to build competitive fire back up before competing. Hadn't played since before Christmas. Comes back and wins.
Yeah, a couple of months off. Yeah, no, that can work, obviously. I mean, you can get stale if you keep playing and playing and playing.
But you would have thought you'd be a bit more active. You know, we're in
But you know, some players are just good players. People go, "Oh, why is he this and why?" You know, he's just better than other people. You know, and that's all it is.
Fantastic event, the Genesis, Bob. We had 9 of the world's top 10 going into the event. And Adam Scott, you mentioned his putting woes over the years. He's been better over the last 12 months. He puts sort of with the flagstick in more often than not. But a surprise, would you have said this week?
Adam Scott actually is the biggest proponent of leaving that flagstick in, probably on the PGA Tour. I think if you analyzed his play, he leaves it in a lot more than the average player out there. And I think it's bolstered his confidence. Ball striking, he's one of the best ever to play the game. It was always a question of, you know, how he would react on the greens. And for him to come out on top, where putting was such a premium, you know, that's a pretty good indication for Adam Scott as he moves forward.
I know we changed the rules last year and went to the flag, putting with the flag in, but I still, even though when I go through do the commentary during the year, I still, when I see somebody putt with a pin in from 4 or 6 feet, I want to scream at them and say, take that pin out. You know, I still can't get used to it.
Well, you know, visually, it's pretty tough to watch.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I still flinch. A lot of players firmly convinced, probably led by Adam Scott, that it is an advantage to leave that flagstick in. And of course, the other benefit we derive from that is it does speed up play.
Rory McIlroy was favorite after about 2 or 3 holes, if he wasn't the favorite going into the final round. But Boxy, an unfortunate triple, was it, on the 5th hole? Sort of,
yeah,
scuppered his chances, really. I mean, he had lots of holes after that to get back in it and opportunities to get back in it, but you just sense that mentally maybe he was so shook by that triple that he was never going to win from there.
Listen, I think if you play a course where the winning score is 11 under par, you know, if you have a triple on one hole or bogey on the next, it's a seriously long way back from there. I spoke to a few players that have played at Riviera. You know, and putting is so difficult. Bob was saying the grass grows very quickly out there, and in the afternoon, putting from 5 or 6 feet is, yes, you've got to strike it properly, but there's a little bit of luck involved as well, because you've got to hit the right bump, you know, and they do bump offline. I'm not being rude about those greens, Bob, am I? Surely. I mean, they are really, they've been known in the past to be very difficult and bumpy.
The greens are extremely tough, but they're really not unfair. If you listen carefully to the players talk about, you know, their rounds at Riviera, you'll hear them say that, yeah, it was really tough, but I did not hear one player complaining that they were unfair.
Certainly Adam Scott enjoyed his time at Riviera, and along with the likes of Cameron Smith and Mark Leishman, Win Moo Lee, Wade Ormsby, Lucas Herbert, a lot of Australians have won recently, and apparently the President's Cup, Scott, Cam Smith and Mark Leishman had a little bit of get together, and they said, right, no more mediocrity from us lot. I mean, there's some talented performers coming out of Australia, and they are dominating at the minute, Richard.
They went very quiet for a while. You know, Greg Norman ruled the world for an incredibly long time. But no, they've got some great courses. I've played out in Australia a few times, and the secret about it is I've played some great courses, but I've never played a bad one in Australia, but you must never tell them that.
Because really? Yes. You know, I've never heard that story.
Bob, he's a cruel man, isn't he? What he doesn't get is we're talking to a different audience every day. Repeating yourself is fine, Bob, isn't it?
Are you sure?
Yes, I think so.
Let's move on to have a look at the WGC event in Mexico. Rory McIlroy can become the second player to complete the WGC Slam by winning all 4 World Golf Championship events. Dustin Johnson accomplished this back in 2017. I mean, I know he didn't win last week, and he didn't win at the Farmers when he came 3rd as well, but he rose to world number 1, Bob, last week. I mean, would you consider him the best player in the world at the moment? Is he the man that they've all got to beat whenever he tees up?
I certainly would agree with that. I think it was at some point last year, I forget exactly what event, but I approached Adam Scott and I said, Adam, through your eyes, who is the best player playing professional golf at this time? And he said, Bob, that's pretty easy. He says, Rory McIlroy has more talent to play the game of golf than anybody that's out here.
Bob, I've got a theory. Rory McIlroy, he's world number 1. You know, we can't take that away from him. But I was discussing with somebody the other day. The only thing I think, in my view, that goes wrong with Rory, if he goes wrong, is wedge play is not that brilliant. If you played a golf course and took all the holes where there's a wedge or a sand iron as an approach shot, you know, like a par five or a shortish par four, I think if you took those out and there was like 14 or 13 holes left, he would lead every single tournament. If you keep knocking, they say he's a bad putter. If you keep knocking it to 10 or 15 feet, you will become a good putter. You knock it to 25 feet, people say, oh, I'm not putting very well. So I think, I don't know what you think, Bob, but I just think his wedge play is the only bad bit in his game. And when that's on, he's unbeatable.
Well, that's a good point. And it's kind of surprising because he does have more wedges in his hand than probably anybody on the PGA Tour or European Tour. You would think he would be razor sharp in that department. Rory McIlroy is going to have to look in the mirror and say, wait a minute, unless I can capitalize with a good wedge shot, that long drive is not really doing me any good.
Can we say the same about Jon Rahm? He hits it a long way when he's dialed in with his short irons. He generally wins or goes close to winning.
He's top five man all the time, isn't he? I think it won't be long till he becomes world number one, I'm pretty sure. I think he'll slide up.
Is he closer with his wedges than McIlroy is? In terms of he's got less issues. He's got less issues.
Oh, yeah, much better. I would say when his wedge plays on, I'd say McIlroy's a better wedge player than him. When McIlroy's on, but he has a couple of wide ones with the wedges, which shows how good he is in every other department because he's world number one.
Speaking of wide ones, Bob, Justin Thomas missed the cut last week. He was heavily tipped to win. He scored in Hawaii. He was third in Phoenix. He won the CJ Cup back end of last year in Korea, gunning for world number one himself. That was a real surprise that he missed the cut. What about his chances this week?
Well, of course, they're good. I mean, Justin Thomas is a bona fide star on the PGA Tour. He just ran into one of those bad weeks. He missed a couple of putts early on Thursday and Friday, fails to make the cut, so he had no opportunity to rally. It will not affect him. I mean, Justin Thomas, the pedigree that he plays this game with, his father a club professional, his grandfather a club professional, Justin Thomas will not even remember Riviera by the time he tees up in Mexico on Thursday.
Tommy Fleetwood. What sort of chances, Tommy, this week?
Oh, Tommy's got a good chance every single week, I think.
2017 was when he was second in this event.
Yes.
His last four starts, first in the Nedbank, second in the DP World Tour Championship, second Abu Dhabi, and 11th in Dubai.
Oh, I think Tommy Fleetwood's a great player, much improved. Personally, I think Dustin Johnson will defend.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll get to your selection shortly. I want to talk about one or two of the other players that are playing this week. What about Webb Simpson, Bob? Because he's a player that seems to go under the radar all the time, but he managed to beat Tony Finau in that playoff in Phoenix recently. And again, like a number of the players we've mentioned already, just seems to be top 10 every single time he plays.
Well, he's a model of consistency. He's a hard worker. He has five children, so I guess his off-course time, he doesn't spend thinking at all about golf. He's got those children to worry about, and he's a great, great guy. And one hidden element about Webb Simpson, he has a caddy by the name of Paul DeSori. Many could make the argument, maybe the best caddy out there currently. DeSori used to caddy for Vijay Singh. So Paul always tells me, he says, hey, after you've caddied for Vijay Singh, caddying for anybody else is like being on vacation.
Do you know, actually, I met Webb Simpson. You know Rich Beam. You obviously know Rich Beam, Bob, don't you?
PGA champion.
Yes, from a long time ago. Anyway, he works with us, and I met him when I was at the airport with him after the Open at Canoosti, I think, and Webb Simpson was there, and we were having a couple of things, you know, come out of that bottle that make a noise when you take the lid off, you know the ones I mean. And it was a really nice bloke, Webb Simpson. I was really impressed.
Hey, he really is. Yeah. I mean, he's just a solid, solid guy that has a wealth of talent. His career was set back a little bit when, you know, they banned the anchor putting. He was a big proponent of that. He seems now to have made the adjustment to, you know, become not even a good putter, I think an exceptional putter. And he's sneaky long off the tee, very accurate with his irons, Webb Simpson has to be regarded as a factor almost every time you tease it up.
Same with one or two others as well that I'm just going to mention. Xander Schauffele, who's got an excellent record in the WGC events. Real solid start to his career in these particular tournaments. Six top 20 finishes in 10 WGC starts. We've got Adam Scott teeing up, who won last week. Tony Finau, who just can't seem to win again. Will Tony Finau win this year? Boxy.
Yes.
Will Tony Finau win this year, Bob?
I'd be surprised if he didn't.
But we could have asked this question last week, week before, month before, yeah. year before. He just doesn't win. Why doesn't he win?
Well, it's confidence. You know, you can play all the shots. It's putting them together in one go. I mean, it's like, you know, people who go down the range, anybody who goes down the range, it's easy on the range because you've got 500 opportunities. But on the golf course, you've only got one chance, and that's when the brain box comes into play. And whether you can cope with it, whether you can't cope with it, whether money affects you, you know, it's one of those things.
It is a fantastic field, but there are some notable absentees. A bit of a surprise, maybe, Bob, that Brooks Koepka is not playing this week.
Well, a bigger surprise, Dan, is a disclosure by Brooks that that knee injury that he sustained is maybe worse than we've been giving him credit for. When he admits that just last Monday, that knee was as painful as it's ever been, and the pain was kind of extreme. Now, when you take a power player like Brooks Koepka, he needs that solid foundation of his legs. And I'm, you know, for one, a little bit concerned about the immediate future of Brooks Koepka. You get a bad knee, it's pretty hard to shake, especially when you're that violent through the golf ball. For Brooks to allude to the fact that it's not quite right yet, it's kind of a scary prospect.
I find it strange, Bob. Okay, I know Woods isn't playing, and Woods is 44 on his back, maybe worse than we think it is, and this is just the way he's going to have to play now for the rest of his days. But I'm surprised that a lot of other, forget injuries, but a lot of other top players are able to pull out of a WGC event. I find it absolutely astounding when they're probably the easiest tournaments to win in the respect of the
smaller fields.
You've got 72 here playing, top 50 in the world rankings, obviously.
World ranking points available as well.
No cut. You know,
what are you suggesting there? Guaranteed money? So you know, Cantley and Rose are the other sort of notables that aren't playing on with
you. But, you know, Bob, I don't know whether you're with me or not. I find it astounding. I can only talk from my playing days. I would never in my life have missed a tournament where there's no cut.
Yeah, I mean, we're only one step away from a player saying, well, I don't think I'm going to play in the Open Championship this year.
And exactly.
I don't really like the golf course. And my son is going to go for his driver's test, so I'm not going to be able to make it to the Masters. I mean, this is what you do when you have millions in your pocket. Yes, they'd like to win a big event, but it's not going to affect their livelihood. It's not going to affect their career. I mean, players nowadays are so well compensated that we have to get used to the fact that, you know, they'll skip an event, as Boxy said. Just to skip a World Golf Championship event doesn't make any sense to me. Only 70 players. I mean, when you throw in no cut, it means that, you know, you can have mediocre Thursday and Friday and still go on to win on Saturday and Sunday.
You can.
I mean, that's unbelievable.
And just highlighting the fact, Phil Mickelson, who may well not have qualified anyway, I'm not quite so sure he was going to be in the field, but he said ahead of the event, my kids have the week off, so we're going on a trip after I shoot a commercial that I have scheduled, so he wasn't going to be fussed anyway.
No, I'm really sorry. I can't play the WGC because I've strained an eyelash. It really is, you know, I find it unreal.
Ricky Fowler, Jason Day, Henrik Stenson, others to miss. You mentioned earlier, Bob, about Tiger Woods with that four-putt. The last time he had multiple four-putts in a season was back in 1998, and he's had a couple over the course of the last 2 weeks. We saw Colin Morikawa five-putt from 22 feet yesterday as well, which was extraordinary.
Did he? I missed that. Is that right? Did he?
Unbelievable.
Must have popped out for a chicken sandwich at that point.
Yeah, well, you could have two the time he was taking on the green, I tell you. But that was, I guess, because of the greens, because of the nature of them, as we've mentioned already. He's still box office, though, Woods, isn't he? Did you see?
Oh, yeah. 17.
Was it 17? I can't remember which one it was.
17 is par 5, yeah.
Where he chunked his bunker shot and then chipped in for birdie. Did you see that one?
I did. I think I did. What do you mean? I think I did.
Yes, no, you did. Yes, you did. We did have events around the globe last week, and one that we're going to focus on just for now was a co-sanctioned event between the European Challenge Tour and the Sunshine Tour, and a win for Christian Bezuidenhout, who completed a wire-to-wire victory at the Dimension Data Pro-Am in South Africa, thanks to a stunning eagle on the 72nd hole at Fancourt Golf Estate. The South African stood on the par 5 18th tee, trailing countryman George Kurtsier by one stroke, but hit an incredible second shot to 6 feet and holed the eagle putt to claim the win. And he's now up to number 48 in the world rankings, and of course heading to Mexico for the WGC event this week. It's an incredible backstory with Christian, isn't it? And he went close to winning on the proper tour not so long ago. Should have won out in the desert. Pleased to see him in the winner's enclosure, even if it's just a Challenge Tour event.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bezuidenhout, I mean, he did pick up his first win last year at the Andalusia Masters down at Valderrama. And let me tell you, Valderrama is the course. I don't know whether you've ever been there, Dan, or not, or Bob. I think Bob probably has. If your game is not quite on, Valderrama will find you out massively. I mean, Valderrama turns a 72, you know, on any other course into 78, 80. It really is a very tough course. But he's had his first win. He had a fantastic season last year on the European Tour. And he's got off to a good start again. He's a South African, had a few things go wrong when he was younger. You know, had some rat poison, caused a stutter for him. But he's great. He comes on our show with Nick Doherty, he has a chat, and he really puts the effort in. He's a smashing lad, and I would imagine he'll win a few more.
Could he win this week? Because he is playing in Mexico. We need some selections from Bob and from Boxy. Richard, you can go first. Obviously, this time around, usually we pick one from outside of last year's Race to Dubai Top 50, but the normal rules are out of the window because it's a WGC event. So one pick has to be European, but that's the only restrictions that we impose
enforce
on you. Yeah.
Okay, right, I think Dustin Johnson will defend. Very difficult thing to do. He'll have a lot on this week. But watching him play the last couple of weeks, I know he was 78 in the last round at Pebble Beach, but you have those days every now and then. And the other one, I think it won't be long. I mentioned him earlier that John Rahm will ease up to number one at some point this year. So John Rahm's my European.
Okay, so Rahm for the European angle. DJ from the American point of view. Bob, who'd you like? Two players this week to follow in Mexico.
I'm going to go out on a limb a little bit. He hadn't been playing well lately, but when he gets hot, he can run the table, and that's Patrick Reed. I think he may get the job done down in Mexico.
Every time I hear Patrick Reed's name, I immediately think we all should boo. Because he's a bit of a pantomime villain, isn't he, at the minute?
He certainly is, but if anybody can handle that role, it seems to be Patrick Reed. It kind of inspires him. I mean, it would deflate most players. For my European, I agree. I mean, this is John Rahm's type of golf course.
You've got to have someone else,
but really,
you can't just have Boxy's nabbed John Rahm. You've got to go for someone else. Come on.
Ooh, I think we'll ask Boxy again. I'm going to take Rahm, but Boxy doesn't get preference over me.
Do you know what? That's like going out for a meal and saying $112. I'm not paying that. You pay it.
Boxy's thrown that one on you. We've all got our separate selections. You know how this show works. You've done it before.
All right. We invite you back
when we can't get anyone else.
Bob's going to take John Rahm. If he wants John Rahm, okay, that's fair enough. I'll go for another Spaniard as an each way.
I'm Spartacus. I was going to take John Rahm.
And I hope this fits with you, Bob, but I'm going to go for Rafa Cabrera Bayo as an each way bet.
Okay, so Cabrera Bayo instead of Rahm. And Bob, you're going to pick out Reed and Rahm. I am going to go for Rory McIlroy, the current world number one.
Yes, which is really putting one's head on the block.
But I've put a lot of thought into this.
Yes, I think I'll go for world number two.
And Rory could be the man to follow this week. And my other selection, and I'd be interested to get Bob and Boxy's thoughts on this one, Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah, I was going to say him as well.
He's added a little bit of length to his game.
Well, he's muscled up, isn't he?
You know?
I'll tell you what he's also
probably
done.
Should have won in, was it Dubai, where he went over the edge, didn't he?
When
the
wind was
it? I can't remember which one it was. But he played well. It was Dubai, wasn't he? He was eighth in Dubai. And then down the field in Phoenix. Fifth at the Genesis yesterday. So it's
I always like your little go for your... Little
Bob, tips. Bryson this year, this week?
Certainly he's... different physically. Matter of fact, I have a meeting scheduled with him because I've been on the very same workout routine and do not seem to be getting the results that Bryson DeChambeau is getting. But
you
but
need to put, you need to put his hat up. On, Bob. Put the hat he wears on the flat cap, mate. You cracked it.
Well, I'm not a physics major like Bryson was in college also, but he's the real deal. I mean, he analyzes this game better than anybody. He figures things out. He's going to have to play a little bit faster. But it's not a long shot to say that Bryson DeChambeau, at some point over the next couple of years, will be number one in the world.
Yeah, there is a good point to that. I must say, I think having watched him over here in Europe, he's definitely quickened up, Bob, and the new rules that have come in. I know it doesn't sound a lot to people listening, but, you know, when we were in Abu Dhabi, it was 10 to 12 minutes quicker around, which is a lot. I know it makes a big difference in the fields when you've got fields of 132 rather than fields of 156, but they really have picked up on it and moved along. It makes a big difference.
Yeah, it really does. And you know, it's something that has to be addressed. I mean, we're losing players to the sport of golf, the enjoyment of golf, with the major argument being it takes too long, closely followed by the game's too tough.
No European Tour event last week, so we've got a little bit of time to talk about a massive event later in the year when the Americans will be out for revenge.
And Phil Mickelson shakes the hand of Francesco Molinari, and Europe have won the Ryder Cup, and it's the Open champion who seals the win.
It is the 43rd Ryder Cup from Whistling Straits in Wisconsin, comes up in September of this year. And there's been plenty of talk about it already, Boxy. It really is a year-long build-up to it, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, the final qualifying stops at the BMW PGA, which is a fantastic event to finish it at because that's where it started last year. And they do a full 12 months, I think is right. Big event, Rolex event as well. I think there's a lot of pressure on Harrington. I think it's very difficult. I think it is. We have one, obviously, in America, but I think it's very difficult to go to America and win.
You've been out on the European Tour in the desert for the three events, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, and Saudi. We saw GMAC win. We saw Westwood win as well. Is there a sense for players of that age and that quality that this might be the last chance for them to play this year? Do you sense that they're thinking about the Ryder Cup more so than ever?
I would say certainly for Westwood, it's slid in now. And probably for Graham McDowell as well. I just think they're getting, you know, they're not young anymore, are they? So, you know, those days, those heady days of your middle 20s and sort of up to the middle 30s when you were playing in Ryder Cups and winning tournaments left, right and centre, eventually, as the wheel turns and people fall off, has to come to an end. And yes, I would think that the likes of Westwood, for sure, he's 46 now, Lee Westwood, you'd have to think there's not too many players at that age have played in a Ryder Cup.
Bob, tell us a little bit about Steve Stricker. He's the captain of the USA side. It's a home game for him. There's going to be a bit of pressure on him, isn't there?
It really is. I mean, he's the pride and joy of Wisconsin. And this Ryder Cup's going to be special for a lot of reasons. One is the gentleman that owns the golf course by the name of Herb Kohler, who is big in United States plumbing, I think in worldwide plumbing, but he's given so much back to the game. The people in Wisconsin, you wouldn't think that they would be diehard golf fans, but they really are. And Whistling Straits is not going to be, a slam dunk advantage for the U.S. squad. Matter of fact, it plays, so linksy. I think the Europeans and Patrick Harrington are trying to convince everybody that, hey, it's going to be a home team event for us because of the golf course. But we'll have to wait and see. It's going to be a dandy.
How do you think the course is going to be set up, Bob? Because the accusations from the European team the last time that we saw a Ryder Cup in America was that it was too easy, it was target golf, it was set up for the Americans, it was almost like a resort course in Florida. Is it going to be something similar, or do you think because we're at Whistling Straits, which is a very different type of course, it can't be set up like that?
No, I don't think it'll be set up. I don't think anybody's going to walk away from Whistling Straits with the final judgment being the golf course played way too easy. It's right on the shores of Lake Michigan. Weather's going to be a factor. It doesn't even necessarily have to be warm come the end of September. And it's a very challenging golf course created by Pete Dye. I think it's a wonderful match play golf course because a lot of risk reward holes. And I just think probably it's going to come right down to the last one or two players out on the course on Sunday. But if the rain should come down or the wind should blow, I mean, it'll be a European Ryder Cup being contested on U.S. soil, and that's a pretty rare combination.
So is it the American fans that's going to be the toughest thing from a European point of view, Boxer? You've been to Ryder Cups in America?
I have been to many of them. I think the fans play a massive part in it.
What about the makeup of the team and team experience, Bob? We haven't had a Eurasia Cup this year, and previously European captains have found that event very helpful in terms of their Ryder Cup preparation. From an American point of view, we had a much more competitive President's Cup against the internationals in Australia not so long ago. Will that have primed the American team a bit better, do you think? Because usually it's a bit of a walkover, isn't it? But it was a lot closer this time around.
Yeah, it really was. And is that an indication of what lies ahead? You know, you really can't look at a President's Cup and compare it to anything that happens at a Ryder Cup. I mean, you know, just the emotions, despite the Australians and the many fans that went down to Royal Melbourne to witness firsthand the President's Cup, they just don't have the fire in the belly as Ryder Cup fans do. You know, over the course of the years, so many of true golf fans that I had gotten to meet, and I always asked the question, have you ever been to a Ryder Cup? And they said, no. I said, well, that's one thing you have to do if you love this sport. And I have yet to have anybody come away from attending a Ryder Cup and be disappointed.
Last USPGA Championship winners at Whistling Straits, incidentally, no Americans. Martin Kaymer beat Bubba Watson in a playoff in 2010. We saw Jason Day win there previously and Vijay Singh as well. Dustin Johnson, of course, should have won that one in 2010, but grounded his club in a bunker that he thought was a waste area. So that's something for the players to think about. Speaking of the players, let's talk European team first of all. Boxy, who would you say are locks to make the team? Who are definitely going to be in?
Well, McIlroy will definitely be
in. I mean, Rory's going to be
in. I'll go for it.
Go on, tell me your team. Is this what you'd like to see or what you think will happen?
What I reckon might happen. We don't know. It's still quite early, isn't it? I think it goes Fleetwood, McIlroy, Rahm, Rose, Lowry, Matthew Fitzpatrick. I think Tyrrell Hatton will make it. I also think Matthew Fitzpatrick, I think I may have said him anyway.
Mm. Can't have two Fitzpatricks. You can have two Molinaris,
right,
but not
Fleetwood,
two Fitzpatricks.
McIlroy, Rahm, Rose, Lowry, Fitzpatrick, Tyrrell Hatton. I think Victor Perez will make it. I think he's a fine player. And here's an outsider for you, but I just think he'll do it. Mateusz Schwab, the Austrian. I know he's a rookie.
So you've got two rookies in that?
Yeah, but he's got it as a qualifier, not to be picked.
Sure.
And then my wild cards, I'm going to go for Lee Westwood, Paul Casey and Sergio Garcia.
Would you be concerned that there isn't enough experience in that lineup there?
Because
you've got the likes of Schwab and Perez. Those younger players or those inexperienced players, the last time that we played Ryder Cup in America, they folded a little bit, bar Thomas Peters, who I know you haven't included in your side.
No, I haven't. No, I don't think they'll fold. These lads play for 1.3 million first prize every
week.
It's
different,
though.
You keep telling me Ryder Cup's different.
Trust me.
You can't have it both ways.
No, the Ryder Cup is different. But all I'm saying is for experience, big crowds, under pressure, they play week in, week out. They play eight Rolex events, they play four WGCs, they play four majors and throw four others in. You know, there's your 20 tournaments. I mean, they're massive what they play.
Have you got Henrik Stenson on your list?
No.
So no Henrik. I'm going to go Rory, Rahm, Fleetwood, Rose, Lowry, Casey, Fitzpatrick, Stenson, Westwood, G-Mac, Sergio and Thomas Peters.
You see, Bobby keeps going down the old route. It has to come to an end,
Bob,
and people fall off the hamster wheel and other people get on.
Which European players would you be delighted if they missed out on the team from an American point of view? Who do you fear?
That's really a great question, and the best way that I can answer that, I think the U.S. would have a better chance if Tommy Fleetwood's not playing, but he is so talented and so colorful and brings such enthusiasm to the game. I want him to be playing there, and I think he's destined to be a true superstar if he's not already at that status.
What about the American side? Who would be your 12, who would you like to go to war with, so to speak?
Well, you know, if we picked him as a result of this week's results. We have Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Webb Simpson, Schauffele, Gary Woodland, U.S. Open champ, Tiger Woods. A little bit of a question mark right now. He's on the team. Whether he stays on the team or does Steve Stricker have to make him a captain's pick? I think he would. Tony Finau and Justin Thomas. And my four picks to round out that team, Cantlay, which is a very talented young golfer, Matt Kuchar, Mr. Reliable, Charles Atlas in disguise, Bryson DeChambeau, and also Ricky Fowler.
I'm trying to think who are the big-name players that you've not mentioned there. Bubba?
Phil Mickelson?
Yeah, well, Phil's probably the biggest name, and he would have to have an incredible season, probably requiring maybe to win the PGA, or do I even dare say win the U.S. Open at Wingfoot to become the sixth player ever to win all four of golf's majors. That certainly would get him on the team. Steve Stricker and Phil get along very well. So
what about Patrick Reed, Bob?
Patrick Reed is...
He's 12th at the moment.
Patrick Reed could play his way onto the team. It would be interesting if it came down to being a captain's pick. How do I say this? Steve Stricker is as close to vanilla as you're ever going to find. Patrick Reed is fireworks. So on the surface, it doesn't appear that those two would get along that well. But we'll wait and see. Bubba Watson, somebody also that could have a good year, could even go on to win his third Masters, then he would have to be considered. And then the mystery man, probably the biggest mystery man in golf right now, Jordan Spieth, who just a few years ago, people were saying that he has the potential to be the greatest ever. And now it's been a long time since he's even gotten to the winner's circle.
Okay, Bob, big question coming up for you. Patrick Reed finishes 13th. You've got eight qualifiers and four that get in. He's 12th or 13th on the list. Now, let's put him better. He's ninth on the list. Do you pick him?
If he's ninth on the list, I think you have to.
If he's 13th on the list.
Well, then that gives you reason not to pick him.
Give us, I know we've all done our teams, but give us one player that might push Boxy from a European point of view, someone...
What, to get into the side?
I mean, could you see an Eddie Pepperell have a really good season? A Tom Lewis, maybe?
Yeah, I think... I think Robert McIntyre and Matthias Schwab.
I mean, Schwab, you've probably named one there, haven't you? That's the one from left field.
McIntyre, Schwab... where's my list? It's in here somewhere. Marcus Kinnock's a good player. I mean, they've all got, they've all got a really, really good chance of getting in. You've got some massive tournaments coming up, Bob. You know, we've got some Rolex events over here. You'd have two decent Rolex events. You're in the Ryder Cup.
Bernd Wiesberger, 23 in the world, Boxy.
Yeah, a lot of people
Multiple winner last year. Bob, what about someone who might come from way off to maybe make the team from an American point of view? Could one of the young guns come through? What about a Matt Wolf or a Colin Morikawa?
Well, I was just going to say, Colin Morikawa, Dan, you've done your homework. I'm proud of you.
Quite unbearable, really, Bob, sometimes, but there you go.
This kid's got a wealth of talent. Wouldn't surprise me if he played his way onto the team. And then it's probably going to make some long nights for Steve Stricker as to whether he takes him or not. When you look at the team that I had in focus right at the moment, we're really not building anything for the future. I mean, at some point, you got to start laying the groundwork for upcoming Ryder Cups, especially when we go to Rome. That's going to be incredible.
As it stands right now, if I gave you two £100 each, or $100 if you like, to place on either the USA or Europe to win the Ryder Cup, who would you back? This is hard currency now. Who would you back?
Back
Europe?
I would probably back the Americans, really. I think it's hard in America.
Really? Absolute traitor. Bob,
no, I'm not a traitor at all. saying I think that was, it's very hard. I nearly said Birmingham with a B then. It's very hard to win in America. It really is.
Bob, who'd you like to win at this stage?
Well, you didn't ask me who I'd like to win.
It's the same thing.
Let me answer the question.
No, I can't at the moment. He's asked me a disgustingly bad question here. He said to me, who would you put it on? Not who would I like to win. I'd like Europe to win, obviously.
All right, okay, listen. Bob, Who do you think will win the Ryder Cup in 2020?
Well, the key to your question is you alluded to the fact that you were going to give me 100 pounds exactly. for me to wager. And based on that, I would wager on the European side because the odds are going to be longer.
They are.
It's not my money if I lose that 100 pounds. You're the one that's going to feel bad. So I'd bet on the Europeans.
Do you know, I'd never, ever feel bad giving you cash. And it'd be $100 for you, not pounds. Yeah. That saved
so
me a couple of quid.
Who would you put yours on?
I'd go the tie, 10 to 1. Outside
of a three. I knew you. Could somebody please pass me the fence? Hang on.
That's not the fence. That's the biggest price runner of the three.
No, it is the biggest price runner.
On a more serious question, do we think it's going to be a lot closer than the last time in the United States? Do we think Europe are going to be better prepared? You mentioned pressure on Harrington. To a certain extent, that's true. But because we're almost getting into this thing where it's like, if you're at home, you should win.
Yes.
Is there less pressure on him on that sense?
No.
Can you turn it round that way?
Listen, this is the way I look at it. This is purely and simply how I would look at it from a player's point of view. I would much rather be a Ryder Cup captain at home or in Europe. I'd enjoy it so much more. So much more. Going to America is hard work.
Well, the battle has already started. If you want to see one of the opening salvos, watch the special 14-club challenge video at RyderCup.com. It is captains Harrington versus Stricker, and it escalates quickly.
The rules are simple. Throw an X, one X, closest to the ball wins.
Okay, I'll take my chances.
Steve Stricker and Porrick Harrington, battle lines drawn already. Very good player, Steve Stricker. Always one of the best putters on tour, wasn't he?
He's an excellent putter. Played with him once. That was in the third round, I think, at Royal Lytham and St Anne's in the Open Championship, 96.
Well, Ryder Cup Europe has launched a brand new video series of exclusive behind-the-scenes tales from some of Team Europe's greatest players. We played you Lee Westwood's story about Seve on last week's show. There's more released every couple of weeks via RyderCup.com and Ryder Cup Europe's social media channels. You can follow via the hashtag RCConfidential. Boxy, Bob, best broadcastable behind-the-scenes Ryder Cup stories.
Oh, crikey,
broadcastable.
There are so many.
And brief.
Very brief. I remember Peter Baker said to me once, he used to play at the Belfry. He said he's never been so nervous in all his life. He said he stood on the first tee. They played tournaments there year after year after year. He stood on the first tee when he was announced for his name, and he looked down the end of the tee and he thought, crikey, that oak tree overhangs quite a lot over the right-hand side. I've never noticed that before. And promptly snapped it down the left-hand side. But, no, there are so many. There are so many stories.
Bob, your brief best memories of Ryder Cup battles.
Well, it's not a memory of a Ryder Cup battle, but it's probably the greatest comeback in all of sports history in 06, the Ryder Cup. I was doing Irish TV. Working alongside of me as my color commentator was Graham McDowell. Flash forward to 2010 when he wins the U.S. Open. I walk up to him and say, Graham, that is by far the greatest comeback in the history of sport, especially golf. You went from working alongside me, which is nothing, to winning the United States Open.
It's hard work, Bob. It's difficult.
Do you know, Bob, I think deep down you're just a European. You all seem to want the Europeans to do well. Deep down, you're one of us, aren't you, Bob?
Well, I've been on Talk Sport now 20 years. If that doesn't make me a fan of the Europeans, nothing will.
Well, it makes you something, but I'm not quite sure what that means. Bob, many thanks for joining us on our WGC Ryder Cup special. We'll speak again soon. Have a great week.
Best to both of you guys.
Cheers, Bob. I'll see you soon, mate.
You got it, buddy.
Elsewhere, April's Maybank Championship in Kuala Lumpur and the Volvo China Open in Shenzhen have both been postponed due to the outbreak of coronavirus. The European Tour and Asian Tour accepted a request from title sponsor and promoter Maybank to postpone the Maybank Championship, while the decision to postpone the Volvo China Open was taken following consultation with tournament stakeholders. Keith Pelly, chief executive of the European Tour, said, "The well-being of our players, spectators and staff is always our absolute priority. The tournaments might be rescheduled later this season." Now, the European Tour has a great video feature at the moment on the perfect swing, Boxy. Are you listening?
Yes, I'm listening.
How coaches and technology help players to try and find it. How close to perfection was your swing, Mr. Boxall?
I would say quite a long way from perfection.
I was going to say, didn't you have a rather idiosyncratic swing?
No, I used to have my hands very slightly behind the ball. I was a quick swinger of the club, but I never really had any lessons or anything like that. I got a few basic lessons to start with, and I had a Graham Everett was my coach at Camberley Heath, where he'd sort of help me out, but I was never as technical as they are nowadays, you know, and I did it all by feel. You know, if I wanted to hit one from right to left, I would work out, I'd close my stance a little bit, close the club face down slightly, but I would feel it with my right hand, if you know what I mean.
But it must be difficult now for players not to use technology.
Oh, it is, because you've got to go with the flow, haven't you? You've just got to go with everything now. I mean, they have to use technology.
Do you think you would have been a better player with what's available now?
The way the golf is carried on now and what they do, I think I probably would have stopped.
You wouldn't have played at
all? No, I wouldn't have played at all, no, because that's not my life. That's not how I do things.
Who's got the best swing in golf?
I'd have to say...
I mean, we've talked about Adam Scott winner this week. I mean, Scotty's got a great swing,
Adam Scott, I think, has got a fantastic swing. Louis Oosthuizen's got a great swing. I'll tell you who else has got a good swing. Thomas Peters. And Thomas Dietrich are not bad either. Good swings.
But you can have an unconventional swing.
Oh, Renner Raymond Darcy.
And still win golf tournaments, even in this day and age. It doesn't dictate everything, does it?
No. Darcy, bless his cotton socks, Raymond Darcy used to look like an octopus falling out of a tree when he used to swing it. But, you know, you got the secret is this, and this is for free, Danny. The club face, as long as it's in the right place at
the
right
time,
and when it hits that ball, if it's flat on with it, it'll go straight.
Doesn't matter what happens before or after.
No, doesn't matter at all.
Latest player blog at europeantour.com is from David Howell. He talks about being chairman of the European Tour's tournament committee, the new pace of play rules, and about the last 2 years for him as a golfer, which he describes as absolute hell. Really good blog. Make sure you're across that one. And also on europeantour.com, there is an article on the most annoying phrases in golf. There's a Twitter thread as well. If you look back over the last week on the European Tour's Twitter feed, there's a number that have been thrown out there by golfers, including Boxy. Tell me if you like these or not. Staying in the moment. Yes or no?
Do I like it? Staying in the moment.
You don't
not
mind
too
that
bad.
One.
I don't mind that.
Right.
I don't mind that one.
One shot at a time.
Yes, that's the same as staying in the moment.
We, as in we played a great golf shot.
Can't bear it.
No, great shot. Golf. Incidentally, a great golf shot is the one I don't like. Well, I mean, you're playing golf.
Yes.
You don't need to say great golf shot.
No.
I hear it all the time. Yeah, I don't know if you're a culprit on commentary as well.
No.
As in, you're talking about you. You're talking about your team, aren't you?
Yeah.
Like me and my caddy, my coach. We as a unit.
We used to have a little phrase in the late 80s where your caddy would always turn round and you could hear them in the bars and places afterwards where he said, we birded the first five and then he triple bogeyed the sixth.
Oh, really? I see.
Yeah.
And you would say the reverse, I guess.
I would say I
birdied 1, 2, and 3, and we bogeyed 5 and 6.
I birdied 1, 2, and 3, and then that it's not audible. Audible? Yeah, that was close.
These are the other ones that have been listed. Come on, let's hold this putt, said by caddy to player.
Most annoying.
Calling a great shot too early before it lands and rolls into the rough bunker. I've seen that an awful lot. Commentators, is that a culprit?
No, it's called keep your mouth off my ball.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And I don't watch leaderboards. We've had this conversation for years.
No, we don't believe it. I don't watch leaderboards in brackets, liar.
All right. Any others?
The other one was when you've marked your card, 76, 74, Richard, 150. See you next week. So back home, watch grandstand. See how the boys are getting on.
I see. Straight back racing. Saturday morning. Not required for the weekend once again.
Let's go to Huntingdon now for the racing.
Speaking of next week, that's when we'll be back. Actually, myself and Richard, we won't be. Our stint is over just for now. But you can keep up to date via europeantour.com, the official app, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Boxy, enjoyed your company as always. Thanks for coming on.
Yes, no, I've enjoyed it as per usual.
Fantastic stuff. And from me, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We'll see you next time.
This has been an IMG Audio production.